Carl Claus wasn't ready to become a widower. He missed his wife so much that he wrote her almost daily letters for a year after she died. Letters like this.
Thursday, December 5. Dear Kate, every day this week I'm having lunch or dinner with one of our friends. So many invitations that I feel like a social butterfly. But the flurry of invitations will probably dry up so quickly that I'll wish I hadn't been worrying about it. Still, I can't help feeling there's something wrong with my going out like this so soon after your death, especially when I think of your mother's lonely vigil in the wake of your father's death. Maybe it's also my childhood memory of how we all wore black armbands for several months after my Uncle Manny died, but something deep within me makes me feel as if I'm breaking a taboo. Yet it's hard to say no, and not just because I don't want to turn away our friends, but also because I don't want to spend my days and nights alone without any kind of companionship. You'd know exactly what to do in this situation, and you'd do it without all this fretting. Isn't it ridiculous? I'm 70 years old and don't know how to behave without you.
Carl Claus has compiled those letters into a book called Letters to Kate, Life After Life. He still remembers every detail of their last day together.
She had gone off that morning to an art fair. She was planning to buy some Christmas gifts, pieces of pottery, jewelry. She'd come home at about 1 in the afternoon, and I said, well, don't worry. I'll have lunch ready in just a few minutes. I was boiling some pasta, in fact, for some spaghetti that I had made for lunch. And when I turned around, I noticed her standing by the oven, staring into the wall of the oven blankly. And it was so blank that I thought that there was something wrong. And I said, are you okay? And she said, oh, yes, I'm just hungry. I have a little headache, but I'm sure that food will take care of everything. And so I turned around to stir the spaghetti again and then looked back again. And there she was, still staring blankly at the oven. And then suddenly the strangest expression started passing over her face, one so tender that I don't think I'd ever seen anything like it before, and then one so pained once again that I never had seen anything like it before, and then one so blank that it seemed as if she were a million miles away. And I said, I think that there's something wrong. Let me call 911. And then I knew that we were really in bad trouble, and I went to the phone and called 911, and they were out in 5 minutes because the ambulance is stationed at a hospital just about 6-7 blocks from us. And while they were there, she was still talking, though she had fallen out of the chair in the interim between my call and the ambulance and it arriving. But one of the medics said, her vital signs are good, don't worry. And I thought about coming down in the ambulance, and they said, no, you can just drive down in a car. So though I knew that this was something very, very serious, I also thought that it was something that could be dealt with. I had no idea that she might be dead 3 hours later.
When did you begin writing to her after her death? Was it right away?
I began writing to her a week after she died, and I started without any kind of premeditation. I had gone up to our TV room where there are a couple of chairs. I was alone, I should add, for the first time that week. My children had gone home. Her sister had gone home. All the friends and relatives who had swept through the house that week had taken their ways. And I was alone for the first time, and I just went up to sit in her chair, pulled a tablet out of a basket that she kept by the side of the chair to write in, because she was always writing. And suddenly I found myself writing her a letter. And it was without any intention to do so. It was as if the muse had descended upon me and I was not free not to write.
Now, you've kept a journal for years, haven't you? You and Kate have done that.
Yes, we had both kept journals, and I had turned several of my journals into books. And I had, the last year that I was teaching, taught a course in the art of the journal, where I had suggested to my graduate students that perhaps the best thing they could do to give a journal a sense of focus was to center their entries on some crisis in their life.
But still, keeping a journal was something you were accustomed to, and this is different. I mean, the logical thing, it seems to me, would have been for you to sit down and do what you'd always done, to express yourself to your book. But instead, something made you talk to Kate instead.
Right, exactly so. And, you know, I didn't realize it until later, but in part, it was simply a deep existential need to be in touch, as we had been every day of our lives for the 35 years we had been married and the 2 years before that I had been courting her, when at the end of every day I told her, as she would ask me, "So what happened today?" And I, in turn, would say to her, "So what happened?" We shared our days, and we had a marriage that was very, very close, quite intimate, so much so that we were rarely ever apart.
One of the things that I think people are shocked by, it seems to me anyway, and perhaps you can correct me, is that we expect there to be lots of help dealing with grief, that there should be, especially for writers, there should be lots of books about dealing with this. But there aren't really, are there?
Yeah, that's the paradox, in fact, of memory, that it is at once a source of anguish in that it keeps our grief green, but on the other hand, it's a source of great strength in that it reminds us of all of the power, all of the love, all of the beauty, and all of the gifts that that person has given us. And over the course of the year, it was that aspect of memory that came to save me and actually to give me strength that I never imagined I had had before, because I suddenly realized that in a strange sense, it was as if she had been preparing me all the days of our time together to survive without her. The daily act of writing her enabled me not just to keep in touch, as it were, but to keep drawing on the extraordinarily rich bank of memories that I had, and that forced me to keep confronting the problems and issues that are raised by the death of anyone, and that led me to thoughts about death and about life and the meaning of both that I never would have had otherwise.
Of course, one of the things people tell you is that the first year is going to be the hardest, and so in some ways you spent an intense year maintaining contact with Kate. Did it change when the anniversary of her death finally came around?
Well, it changed just slightly before the anniversary. She died on November 23rd. About a week before, I had gone to a place in Hawaii where Kate and I had often vacationed, Hanalei Bay on the north shore of Kauai, to scatter her ashes with my daughters, with her sister, with a friend who's a resident of the islands. And I had been holding her ashes, in other words, for an entire year, and imagined that this would be a beautiful place to scatter them and a place that would be befitting, as I saw it, her beauty. And so that day, scattering the ashes, was the day in which I found an extraordinarily powerful sense of relief, unburdening, that I had never imagined could possibly come from such an event. And in part it was because of the strange beauty of that bay, of the mountains that back it, but also of the appearance of the ashes as they hit the water, almost diving in streaks down to the bottom, as if suddenly she had been brought to life again by the infusion of water into her ashes, but also by the strange and inexplicable phenomenon that came at the conclusion of it when the captain of the outrigger who had taken us out invited us just to take a few minutes to think about what we had done. We had also cast lays upon the water, an ancient Hawaiian tradition, lay upon lay upon lay upon the water, which itself was gorgeous to behold. But at the climax then, just after he told us to take a few minutes to think about the experience, suddenly a rainbow appeared over the mountains, a rainbow without rain. And we were all simply swept away by that phenomenon that simply cannot be explained except in some kind of otherworldly working of her powers. She was an extraordinary writer and dramatist, and she, I imagine, wanted to have commandeered the moment.
Carl Claus is the author of Letters to Kate.